Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Sports City. It's your boy TP Timeless. We are back in the kitchen. Little hiatus over the weekend. I apologize on behalf of myself. A couple of situations have been going on within my life, but I'm back, Sports City. You already know what time it is. 60 minutes here to wrap up. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside. The kitchen timeless is alive. Sports City, settle on in. We are back. Let's go.
For their purchase. We surely appreciate it. What you about to witness is my thoughts.
Just my thoughts, man.
Right or wrong, just what I was feeling at the time. You ever felt like this? Vibe with me.
Walk with a nigga, man.
Vibe with me. Yo, gather round, hustlers, that's if you're still living. And get on down to that old jig rhythm. Just a couple of jewels to help you get through your bit in prison. A ribbon in the sky, keep your head high. Young Vito, voice of the young people, mouthpiece for hustlers, I'm back.
The call number is 917-889-9592. Like I said, you got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but y'all are here with the chefs. Okay, a lot of interesting things going on in the sport world today. We are in the middle of the month of March. In the next 2 days, of course, everybody's going to be going crazy over St. Patrick's Day. I think it's like the national drinking holiday, if you will, throughout the world. I can't just say in America because it's an Irish holiday. Celebrated everywhere, but I think a lot more of the focus around that date of Wednesday going into Thursday will be around the NCAA tournament. A lot of people talking about, you know, teams that have been selected, a lot of the matches that are going on, a lot of the interesting brackets that are going on as well. I think these will actually be, you know, topics and discussion that will spill into each other going in from Monday and into Tuesday as well from, you know, here to wrap up going into the cookout as well. A lot of stuff to talk about in that nature. Also, within the NFL situation, as of today, a lot of situations have jumped off, especially going over the weekend as well. And I'm going to jump into one until we start to get people in here so I could actually, you know, spread my lungs on a lot of these situations before I get, you know, packed in this kitchen if it does go down like that. The first one I do want to get out of the way is the Martavis Bryant the Martavis Bryant suspension. He is in front of a year-long suspension, and they said that he will not appeal the situation. Now, this is very interesting because knowing how the situation has been set up in front of Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh has now lost a couple of interesting wide receivers, and it looks like a one-man show on the outside with Antonio Brown. They already are looking at Heath Miller walk away. Martavis Bryant is going to be out of the picture as well. And it's not like I could overlook the situation on Ben, you know, being, you know, resourceful with what he has and knowing how good of, I could say great. I'm going to say, you know, Ben Roethlisberger being a great quarterback, being able to handle a situation, whether they have to deal with injury or deal with, you know, running backs that just don't know the system or being there for a short stint of, you know, time, being with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Somehow, some way within the AFC North, they are successful enough to pull this off. But knowing that this situation is around Martavis Bryant, I wonder how these guys put it together in this upcoming season, especially with, you know, the loss of, just like I said, the notable tight end and Heath Miller as well, hanging his cleats up, Martavis Bryant being suspended for this season right here. This is a big blow, if you will, because he actually led the team in scoring as well, touchdowns in receiving in the past two seasons also. So he means a lot to this offense. Now, you know, due to the fact that Antonio Brown is one of the premier receivers in the game, I want to at least say top three. You could put him in that discussion as well. Do a lot of these, you know, secondaries and defenses look at trying to attack him, you know, short because he's a good, you know, quick and elusive receiver, so he won't run that big route a lot, but he can run it. Will they sit underneath him and bracket his situation, or do they, you know, just keep clicking how they have been and, you know, get the job done with the receivers and people going out for, you know, being playmakers at the end of the day for the Pittsburgh Steelers? That is one thing that I'm looking at with this Pittsburgh Steelers team, especially at the receiver position. But this is big because, you know, looking at Martavis Bryant's situation, him being in the AFC North, looking at receivers that had, you know, big impact on teams in that division alone, looking at Josh Gordon's situation, being an abuser of a substance situation, and now you look at Martavis Bryant as well, and it's looking like he more or less, you know, hands down just gave up the situation. He's not even trying to appeal it. And I wonder, you know, how much of this story comes out. You know, this is something that we're kind of sitting on waiting to see more about it, but he's being suspended for a season, and he's not going any further with it. He, as noted right here, he's supposed to be receiving $600,000 in this upcoming season. The suspension, I think, negates that without pay from what I'm reading. So this is big in front of Martavis Bryant in this upcoming season. Now, another big blow to another team in the North, but not in the AFC North, is in the NFC North with B.J. Raji, and he's actually sitting out for a season, saying that he's out for a hiatus. However, they're saying that he may be possibly pondering retirement. So knowing how much he means to the front line of that defense, knowing that this has been a stint of what the Packers have actually been faced with trying to deal with run defense, this is big. B.J. Raji actually coming back from being injured two seasons, and you know, I don't know if their run defense will fully be there. Of course, Clay Matthews is a playmaker on the defensive side of the ball. You're looking at a guy like Julius Peppers who, you know, gains another year being a part of the defense, but they have to have, you know, studs up front. If not, and they do have guys on that defense like Daniels that have actually made plays in this season that just went by and made a name for themselves, but them not having B.J. Raji with a lot of the guys up front still would have, you know, made some noise within the, you know, the prowess of the NFC North. And not to say that there's anything, you know, holding the Green Bay Packers back from being successful in this upcoming season. I still think that they're a juggernaut to deal with. Their offense still could put up points. You're still going to have to, I mean, the name of the game is to see who puts up more points on the board. So you're still going to have to deal with Aaron Rodgers and company, with him getting Jordy Nelson after sitting out his year-long, you know, injury situation was pretty big for the Packers. Even though they were successful and they did get to a postseason bid, still retool in certain situations, but this is a big blow with them losing B.J. Raji, at least for this season. Now, if he retires, just looking across the NFL with all of the big names that have, you know, stated that they are retiring, with Peyton Manning being the biggest out of all of them, Calvin Johnson being another name, hanging him up, Heath Miller being another name. Now you have B.J. Raji as well in the same season. Everybody is basically walking away from the game of football, and there has been, you know, talks outside of, you know, the lines, how, you know, brain injury, so on and so forth, have been linked to football as well. Are these guys looking at that, you know, like trying to get away from the sport before something does happen to them? And a lot of these guys are leaving at the later date of their careers. So this is something that I'm looking at, especially with B.J. Raji being in the league for 7 years. That's a short step for me because you got guys that are at the nose tackle position that have played for a good duration of their career. And you know, me kind of being a homer in this situation, or a guy that, you know, follows this position because it was a position that I played, a guy like Vince Wilfork, you don't really find guys that play up front for as long as Vince Wilfork has played. And Vince Wilfork is now down in Houston and looking like he may be at the end of his run too. So B.J. Raji, like I said, is 7 years gone. He's taking a hiatus off. I don't know if they said that he may be pondering retirement, but I, you know what, even though he's a division rival, you know, with the notes that I got written here, I'm looking at it as him just taking a year off. But, you know, people get comfortable, especially him being a bigger guy, you know, if he's going to still be in NFL shape and able to be a run stopper, if you will, or a guy that could actually rush the passer, this is something that I am looking at in depth for B.J. Raji at the end of the day. But, you know, with these two topics out of the way, with Martavis Bryant missing a year, and you also have a situation with B.J. Raji missing a year, I think this is big at the end of the day. In the NFL, two big names. These aren't just like under the radar type of guys. These are guys that notably you have a good receiver on the outside in Martavis Bryant for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're going to have to make, you know, how do I look at it as saying like an adjustment and more or less trying to focus this offense on Antonio Brown more without Heath Miller at the tight end position. Also Martavis, you know, being suspended, and now B.J. Raji on a Packer team that had, you know, their issues stopping the run, and B.J. actually, you know, stepping away from the team for a season. And I'm going to actually be optimistic. As much as I am an NFC North guy, I'm going to be optimistic and say that he will end up coming back. But, again, like I said, I don't know if he'll, you know, stay on the treadmill or watch what he's eating and, you know, be aware of, you know, 2017, 2018 at the end of the day. Because if he does walk away from the game, this would be pretty big. And a lot of players are walking away earlier than later. And, you know, looking at the NFL from yesteryear, looking at a situation where a lot of players back in the day, and I'm saying back in the day, like the, you know, the 90s, in early 2000s, a long time ago, or a decade ago, let me just say it like that, but a lot of these guys stayed around for 10-plus years or better. Now you got guys, just like I said, Calvin leaving after 9. You got B.J. that's sitting out after 7, and it doesn't – I don't know how it looks, but the possibility of him walking away from the game is pretty big. This is interesting. Chris Borland last year, too, is another name that actually ended up retiring early. You got Patrick Willis, just to throw names from a team alone. From San Francisco, a lot of these guys are, you know, putting their cleats up and saying no more. I mean, Marshawn Lynch was another name, but he came back to the game. So I know a lot of people in Seattle are, you know, sighing a breath of relief that Marshawn is coming back. But a lot of these guys are, you know, pondering, giving an extra thought about it if they really want to put their body through the rigors of the NFL in its, you know, crucial four-month season, 4 or 5 months. Let me just say September to January, February, 5 or 6 months. Let me put it in proper perspective. At the end of the day. Okay, looking in the queue, I do have somebody here. I have Mr. Silver here. Welcome to the wrap-up. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm feeling pretty good. Daylight savings time snuck up on me, but I'm feeling good.
Okay, your thoughts on, I'll start with Martavis first, and then go to B.J. Raji because I got Martavis out of the way first. So your thoughts on this year-long suspension? His substance abuse situation, I'm trying to look more into it as the story develops more. He's not trying to appeal it. And then I'll let you give yourself some home cooking as well.
You know, the Martavis Bryant situation is an interesting situation. It was something that I read about late last night, early this morning, and getting to the investigation part of it, that he, you know, failed tests and was going to appeal and then on further review of everything, decided not to appeal. There are, you know, some stories about what he said post the ban, things of that nature. You know, the I'm still going to smoke type attitude that apparently was coming, you know, from him and his, and, you know, from him. To me, this is a situation that, you know, we're all going to have our own opinions about marijuana. We're all going to have our own opinions about that substance in and of itself. The straight and narrow, the up and down of it is, in the business that you are in the profession that you are in, it is illegal. Regardless of which state you're in, regardless of where you're at, you can't have it in your system at all. So do what you're supposed to do to the guidelines of your profession and your business. Handle your business professionally. And you know, if you can't do that, then obviously the punishment will fit the crime. I have no unjust or I have no ill will towards this punishment. I feel it was everything it was supposed to be. You failed, and your punishment is sitting the crime. The aftermath, appeal, the not appeal, the hearsay, and I haven't read too much into it to, directly connect him to saying that he doesn't care while he's on suspension, that he's going to do what he wants, and not so many words. But if that is the case, that's something more or less we'll have to deal with him as a person. But the punishment in and of itself, that's something that I think it was definitely, warranted, and I have no issue or problem with that. You just stay off the weed. You can't do it. You don't work in a business that allows you to. You don't work in a profession that has allowed it. Now, whether or not that subject will come up in the next CBA or things of that nature, that's needs to be seen. But as of right now, just put down the weed, stop smoking, and get it together for most of those guys. The B.J. Rogers situation with the retirement, it is something that really isn't a shock to me. What hasn't he done? He has a big moment in his career. He has a pick six in the biggest game in the NFC to get to the Super Bowl, and he has a Super Bowl ring 7 years. And he's been, we're quick to call people injury prone. It is what it is. The guy is injury prone. He's been injured more often than not. He missed an entire year with a pectoral muscle. He's had some leg injuries, we talk about the weight. He has fluctuated, not as much as we can may have seen Eddie Lacy, but he has fluctuated in what he's done. Now, obviously, not ecstatic or want to see him go. I did want to see us re-sign him and bring him back. Like you said, there were problems in the run game, for a little bit he's able to help. Now, when you have someone who's a veteran in the defense that can bring in new guys, you always want those guys between the ears that can help guide the youth. But other than that, to me, it's not a huge shock. It's not a Borland. It's not a Patrick Willis type of situation where, you've been to the mountaintop and lost and you're trying to get there again. It's a guy who's made a Pro Bowl, I think, 4 years. Like I said, he's Super Bowl champion, pick six in the NFC Championship game to put it away for his team. So I think he accomplished a lot when you talk about the professional level he's been on. And I think the injuries kind of got up to him. And he knows that, he's made a lot of money, and it is what it is. I would love to have seen him come back, try and do something, help this defense, help the youth. But it's not as big as a shock to me as these other players. And it is trending that the youth comes down, and you said it. This isn't the yesteryears of the 90s and the 80s where you had guys play for 10, 15 years. This isn't the league where you even have guys play on the same team their entire career. We've got guys in the league that have been on 3 or 4 or 5 different teams within the span of 5 to 6 years. You've got guys in their rookie contract that have been to 2 or 3 different teams. So this is a different league that you mentioned. People staying on the same team, people doing that whole staying for 10 years, I just don't see it anymore. I think unless you're that guy, as it pertains to the J.J. Watts of the world or the top-tier guys, if you're in that middle echelon, maybe a little bit above that, and you're able to accomplish some things, get it done, maybe win the Super Bowl early in your career, I foresee a lot of guys retiring early just because of, the intense nature of this game and what happens to you. It is a trend I see coming. I don't think it's necessarily bad that these guys are retiring early. It gives a lot of parity to the league. But other than that, it's not a huge shock to me. It is a disappointment as a Green Bay fan. I definitely would want him to come back and continue to play for the team. But it's not a huge shock. Like I said, the injuries, I think, are the one key that I harp on. I think if he was a healthy guy for the past 7 years and we didn't lose him for a year, total muscle, I think this might not even be an issue. But again, who knows exactly what he's thinking.
So do you think he has a possibility of coming back, or do you think this is more or less a situation that he's done?
As young as he is, there's always that possibility in 2 years he stayed healthy, he's stayed in shape, and he sees a team, you know, that is maybe a defensive lineman player away, you know, from making a push. I don't see anything outside of that. But do I see him just taking a year off and coming back? No, I don't think this is an instance where he's just taking a year off and resting and then coming back. I think he's done for the long haul. You know, but again, there is that possibility that a young guy under 30 years old, you know, he sits at home for a couple of years. That itch is going to come back. We've seen it with a 38-year-old. So, and that was Hasselbeck played this year. You know, we got kickers, Adam Vinatieri. I know he's not a real player, quote unquote, but we've got, you know, players playing into their 30s that, and 40s that, you know, they'll retire and they come back. So, no, it's not out of the realm for an under 30-year-old player who's by all means still talented, who may have the itch to come back. But I think he really is heart set on being finished in the NFL.
Now, and looking at the situation that, you know, the NFL is actually looking more into, stating that the CTE issue is more or less linked to football, do you think a lot of these players are aware of this situation and trying to get away from the game before they get to their 10th, 11th, 12th year of playing and being caught up into a CTE situation and you know, having injuries, you know, that could be, you know, linger throughout the rest of their lives or career, so on and so forth. You have guys like Heath Miller wrapping it up after, what, 11 seasons. And, you know, just like this one with Raji, I mean, he's saying that it's a hiatus, that he's taking a year off. But, I mean, truly, do you think he would, like, well, I already did ask you. I'm just saying, but I'm just saying in general, people, do you think he will come back? Or, you know, Calvin Johnson, another guy, wrapping it up after 9 seasons. Is his, you know, him being an injury-prone receiver, is he thinking, you know, more wisely about, you know, I want to walk around for the rest of my career? I mean, is this the situation that a lot of these players are thinking about in the NFL, in a league where you're telling them to get bigger, stronger, faster? You got guys hitting 4.3s or 4.2s. They just said that they clocked another guy at 4.1. Like, people are hitting 4.1s. Like that was Bo Jackson, and nobody ever hit that 4.1 again. Like, Philip Dorsett hit it last year. You had another player that's in the combine, well, he actually did it at his pro day. He hit 4.1 this year. Like, there's going to be guys that have that type of speed and you know, threaten to run into a brick wall. I mean, are people really looking and thinking deeper into this situation?
You know, again, we're going to get into the CTE talk, and I think it gets deeper into it. Kevin Nash, former WWE superstar, and I believe it's Brandi Chastain, a former women's soccer player, have both are donating their brains to CTE once they pass. That's what it's going to take. You know, we get onto the subject of CTE, and you said something that the NFL is, you know, directly linked to this, and no, it's not. I think the problem that some people, you know, fear or feel is that this is directly connected to the NFL and things of that nature, and you get CTE by playing football. No, you get CTE by not taking care of yourself and having multiple concussion symptoms and going through that and not taking care of it. When it comes to by continuing to play under circumstances, whether it be boxing, whether it be football or lacrosse or rugby or soccer or basketball, by continuing to play with concussions. Now, football, we understand the likelihood of getting a concussion and hitting heads on an every down play basis is more. The percentage is higher, yes, but we're not directly linking the NFL with CTE. I think the problem that a lot of people are saying is, oh, he's injury. You know, he wants to walk around when he's older. He wants to be able to remember things. I don't think that's an issue for a lot of these guys. Now, when we talk about guys who have a torn MCL and a torn ACL, then tear the other one, then they play 2 more years and they tear it again. Now you're talking about someone who's got a history of leg problems who may retire early because when they're in their 50s and 60s, they want to be actually walking around and try to be able to, you know, maybe run with their grandchildren. That's different. They're not retiring because of the fear of CTE. I think a lot of this is, you know, we hear a word of retirement. We hear that it's a young man and we automatically throw the word CTE into it. Now, B.J. Raji being a Green Bay Packer, I don't see, again, I don't look at the injury reports every single week and diagnose and look at every single player, but going back and looking, a lot of those injury reports that B.J. was on was not concussion-related. You know, the big bone muscle, like I said, for a year. He had a thing with his quad. He had some things with his calf. So he had injuries that were, you know, non-concussion, non-head injuries that I feel, as a big man he is, when you have those injuries to your legs, as young as he is, maybe he does see this as a time to get out, you know, stay into a somewhat of a regular man shape, not a 350-plus pound man running on your feet and legs every day, a regular man playing with his kids and grandkids in the future. So I am not going to relate every single early retirement to something that is a fearment of a CTE. Now, Chris Borland, when he comes out and says the things he says, that is his personal opinion. He is personally fearful for of himself getting CTEs and concussions, so he pulled himself out. It does not mean that whenever I hear of a young man, you know, retiring early, leaving the sport early, I am not going to directly connect that with CTEs. Again, when I talk about B.J. Raji, he is a man who's accomplished at his position some things that are very, you know, good accomplishments at a young age and the injury. So I don't relate to CTE. You know, even a Calvin Johnson, I don't relate that to a CTE as well. I relate that to a situation of, you know, with all due respect, with a situation of losing. You're tired of losing. Money is great. We all talk about the almighty dollar, but he's been making it his entire career. Losing is losing, and when you can't take it anymore, sometimes you just give up. And I think that weighs more heavily on it than I do think he fears at 60 or 70 he may have a CTE type symptom. So, again, for me, none of this really relates back to CTE until a player says, I'm retiring because of that fear. I think a lot of us in the media, we tend to jump the gun when we hear a young man is retiring, and we go straight to the fear of, you know, concussions, things of that nature. And I think that's not the case. I think a lot of the time these young men or these men who have been in the league feel that they've done all they can or feel that, you know, it's just the end for me. I'm done. I'm doing what I need to do. Again, these guys aren't retiring at 65, 70 years old and going off into the sunset. This is a 30-year-old, 35-year-old man and sometimes pushing 40 with a whole life ahead of him. So a second career and things of that nature are never out of the realm for a young man retiring, especially when they're in their 20s and 30s. So to me, it really is just an interesting concept that really comes to effect when you talk about these young guys retiring. Again, we always throw the CTE in there. I think we get a little too quick to jump that gun.
Well, I wasn't basing it all on CTE. I was just more or less looking at health issues and stuff of that nature. I think the more relevant one that I was looking at is CTE, with guys having brain trauma, things of that nature. Now, Calvin hasn't, you know, sustained the concussion or been held out with that situation, but, you know, Calvin has had lingering injuries. I mean, broken fingers, you know, an ankle that lingered last year for 5 games, tailbone situation that held him out for, you know, the early portion of his career. And this is the crazy thing that people don't know about Calvin Johnson. Calvin's mother and sister are doctors. They're doctors. So you got to think about them telling them about his health risk. I know that it is a situation of a losing portion in Detroit, but he's also been the help of seeing 2 different playoff stints while he was there also. So I think that comes into an assessment also. And just like we've seen with a guy like Chris Borland that you spoke, well, I brought up and spoke about him looking at that situation, Patrick Willis being a linebacker at the top of the game. I mean, knowing that these guys have to go out there and lay the lumber, they are in a situation where they can be in front of a concussion. Like, this is something that they have to look forward to. And just like you said, at their age, do they want to be in a situation of a Brian Westbrook where the doctors advise you, if you take another hit like this, or if you look at a Steve Young, if you take another hit like this, you could end up, you know, having mush as a brain, you know? So that is where that CTE situation lingers. But I'm thinking more or less along the lines of, all injury factors and how these players are getting faster. And even if these guys are at the pinnacle of their game, they may be fast, but there's athletes that are coming around that are just as fast or going to be better in a few years as they learn the intricacies of the league's play. Okay.
You're right on that, and I'm not saying that you're specifically the only one that we're talking about. See, I'm saying a lot of times that when we hear a young player in a could be Sports City, it could be any of the news media outlet that we speak of, the first time or the first one of the first reasonings that a lot of pundits give for the young retirement is the CTE, and I think it's the scare. But I don't think that is what it is. And you're right. You know, there are multiple injuries, and especially in the Calvin Johnson case, when you've got family members who are definitely in the medical community that can give you insight into certain injuries that you had, you know, going into your career. So I just really think that a lot of times when you look at these early retirements in the NFL, we as the media always like to go and just want to attach those three letters to it, I think, prematurely. And sometimes it's not necessarily the wrong thing, and it is right that these guys, you know, want to think about their future, think about being able to remember your child's name, your grandchild's name, yada, yada, and not to, you know, to down on that aspect. But I think a lot of it, I think more of it goes towards how they feel in the situation they're in. You know, we look at a Calvin Johnson, you know, yeah, a couple of playoff runs and that, but when you go on a playoff run, then you go back down to the bottom again almost a year after both times, it does weigh on you. And it's not just him, other players too, it weighs on them. Now, again, you're not looking at a player of the caliber of Calvin Johnson that maybe retire after only 5 or 6 years on the Jaguars or 5 or 6 years on the Cleveland Browns. Of course, they're not going to have the high profile. They're not going to have the media coverage that, you know, a lot of that a Calvin Johnson will garner. So, again, we don't see a lot of those guys that retire early that have been on losing teams, or even the guys that have been on winning teams. So, you know, once we start hearing about every single retirement, we start hearing about the reasonings why, we'll start attaching, you know, different reasonings to these retirements. But, you know, with the movie and with the whole Roger Goodell situation and how he's mishandled this for the past 10, 15 years since he's been there, this is one of those things, and before him, this is one of those things that just really, you're really going to have to take the players at their word for. And to me, you know, right now, Roger's gone, and, you know, we hear retiring, you're reading 1 year off. And then again, we got Chris Boren and Patrick Willis, and they're retired. So it really doesn't surprise me anymore. But again, like I said, with the Raji, it's not. I think the accomplishments help you. You have the accomplishments he has. It makes it easier to walk away from a game. When we talk about a Patrick Willis who has the accomplishments at the singular position, doesn't have the team accomplishments of a Super Bowl, kind of does scratch your head. Why walk away? We see that a team like the Niners, though, in that situation, was it watching every single thing crumble on a team that you had just spent the last 2 years, last year in a Super Bowl with? You know, we can get into depth into exactly why he walked away. We know Borland walked away for CTE. We know Calvin's walking away from what he says. It's because he led a full career and he's done with the sport. So it really is. I think to me, going to be a case by case situation. I don't think we're going to see in the next 5 years guys just get up and walk out for fear of CTE or for fear of just getting injured because they know what they're getting into beforehand. I think more of it will have to do with the certain situations they're in, on which teams they're on. Again, and how well they may or may not be playing, and, of course, the injury bug, if it's there, if it's not.
Okay, the caller number 917-889-9592, press 1, you want to get in here. I got one more football topic, and you know, I had tournament topics that I wanted to talk about as well. I know that there was a couple of topics that you let me know that you wanted to bring to the kitchen as well. Now, and this topic that I'm going to jump into, I feel like I don't even like the term hater. I feel like I can be looked at that, disliker, so on and so forth. So I'm going to throw it out there. Eric Weddle, safety from the Chargers, picked up by the Ravens in a 4-year, $26 million deal. I'm not mad at him signing the money that he is getting. I think that they are jumping the gun by talking to him so much, especially in a defense where they are going to be looking forward for him to make plays in the back end, where I think the Chargers defense actually try to keep him as covered as much as possible because, to be brutally honest, I don't really see Weddle as a game changer. That's right. I feel like I'm being a strong disliker, and especially being in the beckons of being a part of a Baltimore Ravens defense. I think that a lot of the Browns, the Steelers, and the Bengals all have passing attacks where they're looking at a 5'8", 5'9" safety that they can just go over the top of him. I don't know what he threatens on the outside. I mean, I can be being critical, especially in a pass-heavy division, but they're going to go after him at least six of those games within the season. Your thoughts on Eric Weddle signing in Baltimore?
You know, the Eric Weddle signing is something that I think they've been trying to fill that Ed Reed void since he's left. A couple draft picks haven't seemed to work out. We do see he is going to have Jimmy Smith back there. He is going to have, oh, my goodness, I'm drawing a blank. They don't have a bad secondary. My mind's all messed up. The problem are, like you said, the big problem is, are they going to be able to cover him up? Again, he is not going to be definitely I'm sorry, I'm using too many adjectives. He is going to be a man that you have to take care of. You can't just sit there and let him free roam, do his thing, Ed Reed type style. So I think this was a bit of a reach. I don't think this is a guy that is going to fit into this system and work out extremely well and be the best fit for them. I think they overpaid. I think they reached. Again, I know I hear a lot of the things about a team because of Eric Weddle and him saying he wanted to play for contender. This is a team that didn't win very much last year, if at all. So, again, I think that's taken with a grain of salt when you see they lost Joe Flacco and all the other pieces that they lost. So, to me, this is a reach. This isn't a good signing. I'm not too keen on it, honestly. To me, the fit for him that I think he could have gone to, and I know they're kind of quote-unquote winning the free agency so far, if you think about it, is the New York Giants. I think they have put enough there in the front four to maybe be help out that secondary with bringing in a Jenkins who, again, will take a lot of gambles, will help out, especially when you got DRC. I think you got an Eric Weddle back there. He can be covered up well enough. I think if he wanted to take some money, he could have definitely made a bigger check with them and possibly helped them out a little more. But to me, I think that's definitely a reach in Baltimore, and I just don't see it working out to the best, for anyone other than Weddle's pocket.
And here's the crazy part about the situation. He's going to be gaining age as these 4 years expire within his contract, and I think other than him being a placement type of guy in the back end of a secondary, I think that's the only thing that favors him is he could be there at the right time at, you know, any given play. But I don't see him being a guy that breaks up passes. He may have had a season or two where he led the league in interceptions. But like I said, this is him getting older. This isn't him getting better. And I think that they could do better within free agency or potentially within the draft on a back end. But by throwing this guy nearly $30 million in the next 4 years, this is something that I raised my eyebrow on with Eric Weddle signing with the Ravens, especially a team that's been, you know, anchored off of their defense. And you threw out Ed Reed's name, you know, I'm taking that like you pushed me or shoved me. I could not throw Weddle in the same conversation as Ed Reed at all. Like he may have had, you know, a year of success and picking the ball off in San Diego, but that's all I'm giving them. You know, and he maybe he may prove me wrong. Maybe he may come out and be a starter for this this Ravens team. But this Ravens team is trying to build their way out of being 500, under 500. And if this defense can actually stop the passing game of a Cincinnati Bengals team that doesn't look like they're slowing down in the passing game, or a Steelers team that, you know, I mean, they may have running backs, but they're going to get Le'Veon Bell back, but they got Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger chucks the ball. And then you got to look at the Browns. I mean, the Browns have receivers on the outside that are going to make plays. I mean, this is a questionable move, at least in my eyes, that they went after Weddle in this point in time.
It's a questionable move, I mean, but it's one. I mean, how many other questionable moves has this front office made that you can go back and think, that was questionable, because I can't think of too many. So I think they're taking a gamble. I think they're using their own and maybe a little egotistical on their behalf, saying, you know what, we've been able to hit and do things. So I'm definitely not, you know, this team to me in Baltimore is a team that this one signing isn't going to make or break their defense. They will have more free agent signings, I believe. I also know that they will do well in the draft. They will fix the problems. Joe Flacco will be back. I mean, as much as I dislike the contract that he got, he is a decent quarterback. He's better than a lot of the quarterbacks in the league. So when you get a Joe Flacco back, they'll be able to fix most of their problems throughout the draft and I think in the rest of free agency. So this is a Baltimore Ravens team to me. In one free agency move isn't going to ruin their entire team. This is a team last year that doesn't have the injuries that they have, totally different team. So we look at Joe Flacco coming back. You look at them possibly, you know, making a steal of a pick, maybe even taking Zeke Elliott in that first round and securing the running back position, which they haven't been able to secure since the last year. Ray Rice was there. You know, potentially, and that wasn't even, you know, a good year for him. I think it was three yards a carry. So for the Ravens, to me, this is one of those things that I think they'll be able to right the ship. This isn't a team that perennially sits there at the bottom. This is a team that was hit with major injuries. And to what you would test tie at that quarterback position, you lose that. And I think it's hard to overcome for any single team in the NFL. So, to me, the Ravens, I don't think this one necessarily brings them, you know, keeps them there at that four-win total, three-win total that they were at this year. I think, but to me, this is a reach. It's overpaying for a player. But I think if they can do the right things and prove what they can do, which is get the right other right guys in free agency and draft the right guys, plus with the health they'll have coming back, I think they'll be okay. This is a division that tears itself apart in the AFC North, regardless of who we're talking about, it, with the exception of the Browns. When we talk about the other three teams, they will not, you know, Baltimore won how many games? And I believe they beat the Steelers last year. You know, this is a division, and they beat each other no matter what. So they'll definitely be in for it next year, especially with Joe Flacco coming back. I'm not going to write them off because they picked up Eric Weddle and made a reach on the decision. Again, I'm never going to place him into the same category as Ed Reed. But like I said, they've been trying to replace him. It hasn't worked. Again, this is another reach that isn't going to work in my opinion. So, you know, it is what it is. But I'm not going to harp on it as this being the end all be all for that defense because they took one reach.
Well, and I'm not calling out the Baltimore Ravens for everything, you know, like everything that they, you know, made moves on. I may have felt a certain way about them letting go of Anquan Boldin, you know, letting him go to San Francisco or, you know, things of that nature and letting go of Torrey Smith, knowing that he was one of their notable receivers, watching their receiver core, you know, be questionable. Then you get a guy back like Steve Smith, making the offense focus around Steve Smith, even though I'm a big diehard fan of Steve Smith. He gets injured, and then you look at your offense basically, you know, hand and knee, beg for games out of Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco goes down. I mean, I could talk about the Ravens for days, but I'm not calling them out as an organization on the moves that they made. Just this one with Eric Weddle, I'm not big on him being in the league for a certain amount of time. Also, him being an undersized safety against guys like A.J. Green, who demands a double coverage, I would laugh at that if I was A.J. Green. Like, okay, yeah, well, throw it up. dog, like let me get opportunity of against this corner and Weddle on the back end. Like I said, I think his high was 6 interceptions in the season, and he led the AFC or the league in that manner. But I think he was the right time, right given situation. I don't see him as one of those pass defenders that's going to get better in due time, especially in a 4-year deal over $6 million a year. He's getting over $6 million a year.
No, I'm saying you're right. I mean, look what he left. I mean, we can get the features if you want, but he left a division where Derek Carr is the only person you're ever going to have to worry about. You know, you're not worrying about Philip Rivers. You're not worried about Mark Sanchez. And you're not worried about Alex Smith. So you leave that division to go to a Ben Roethlisberger-led team. And talk about what you want about Andy Dalton, but in the regular season, that guy could play. So you got Andy Dalton, you got Ben Roethlisberger, and Lord knows what the Browns are going to do. But still, you leave that division for two teams that you know have, you know, star-leading quarterbacks. It just doesn't make any sense on his part as well. I mean, you talk about the Ravens, but, you know, Eric, what are you thinking? Do you really think you can go there and shut down those guys? Like you said, you got AJ Green. Let us not forget, we talked about Martavis Bryant. That's not even their star guy. They got Antonio Brown. They've also got the other guy, Coates. They've got the other kid over there. I forget his name, in Steelerland too. Again, there's one of those things that you really, you know, when you're Eric Weddle, do you really think that you can go up into this division and shut anyone down when you're leading a division where quarterbacks were a scarcity and your biggest competition would have been Derek Carr?
Okay, we do have a caller in queue. Calling from the 2K show, we have Messiah in the building. Welcome to the wrap-up. How are you feeling this evening?
My brother, intervening on my division. Figured I'd call in. Sorry, 2K, spin them by. All this Eric Weddle talk. Sheesh. It's a little Eric Weddle.
Wait. I'm saying it as, I didn't even mean to call myself out. I said I'm doing it as I'm looking at myself as a hater or a disliker. I don't even like to use the word hating, but I feel like the Ravens were reaching. And I thought you were a Jets fan, so you're an AFC North guy?
No, I think NFL free agency, I think it gets overplayed too much because in the end, as well as really going to make the difference in the – he's not Troy Polamalu in his prime. I don't think he's going to – you don't game plan for Weddle. I just think he got a nice payday at the end of his career. I think everyone's been overreaching this NFL free agency. That's kind of been the theme the last week and a half. Guys who haven't even made Pro Bowls is getting the highest paid D-line franchise money. I'm not even going to talk about little snacks getting the whole Thanksgiving meal for the Giants. But, you know, I saw Elmore. I think that's been the theme, and that's why the NFL draft is so important. If you're able to get starters in the late rounds, you're kind of building the – that's the key part. So, I mean, you're trying to tell me you couldn't get someone through the draft for safety instead of paying $6 million for Weddle? Is he going to go out there and call a Gronk?
Right. That's if the Ravens are situated to play the Patriots. Like, do you think, okay, and he's a safety, so that would be his obligation to cover Gronk, right? Is that laughable?
Look in his own division. He's in his own division.
And looking at all of the 6 years, you throw guys like that coming out of Cincinnati. Like I said, the passing attack that he's going to have to worry about in the AFC North, let alone the rest of that remaining schedule, is something that he's going to have to worry about. A lot of these tight ends, there ain't no tight ends that's like 6'1", 6'2". He's dealing with a lot of 6'4", 6'5", guys that he's going to have to lay the lumber, and he's only going to get older as the time goes on. I don't know if he's going to get sharper, stronger, faster. I mean, this is the NFL. We're looking into the combine for these guys to make that type of jump or, you know, transition from the, you know, college ranks to the pro. But I just throwing it at me. I'm throwing it at me, and I wanted to get perspective from everybody else. I felt like the Ravens could have done better than an Eric Weddle at the safety position, especially in a 4-year deal. And I feel like this is, you know, a jump. But hold on, before y'all keep
But I don't know, even with the Ravens, what other moves have they made? Have they boosted up the wide receiver position? No.
That's another one.
Have they tightened up the offensive line? No.
I agree with you that they need receivers. Like when Steve Smith. Steve Smith came back so he could leave properly. You know, like this is a favor. from season in Northeast Mississippi, this is going to be his 15th season. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't know. I think they could have used him. If you're going to get Weddle, I think I'd have got him on the cheap. I'd have said, like, four years for 16. Like we could have talked that out. Like 6 million.
I mean, Weddle, if I was playing Madden, Weddle would have been sitting there after the draft, during training camp, sitting there still unsigned.
Right. Right. Exactly. They made this as an important pickup. Like, hey.
Top priority.
Right. Like, okay, let's hurry up and get him before anybody else touches him. Okay.
I don't know what's going on in this NFL offseason. This has been the weirdest overspending. And we're not talking about Pro Bowlers like last year with guys who was on the move top at each position. Think about the guys who signed, who made big splashes this offseason. These are not big-name guys. They're good players, but they wasn't franchise-changing guys. And I go back a long time. These are Deion Sanders leaving the Falcons to go to the 49ers to put them over top. This isn't Reggie White leaving the Eagles to go to Green Bay. You look at all the signings this past offseason. Has there been one game-changing signing that's changed the fortunes of a franchise?
Not right now, none. No move. What, do you think that, like, the only one I can throw out there, and I don't even think it does, Osweiler going to Houston. Like, Osweiler has, they got to put weapons around them offensively. I mean, their defense is notably has names there, but their defense needs to come up with big stops, especially in the postseason. Like, they need to get a win, you know what I mean? And also, I mean, it's Hopkins there, and then name somebody else that's a big name in their offense. They just lost Arian Foster. You know, like, That's the only name that I could think of, you know, in respects of watching big names leave a Super Bowl winning team as a big name in this market so far. But hold on. I got Mikey D in the building. Welcome to the wrap up. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm feeling great, TP. See who landed on a 10 line in the Midwest last night?
Who's Syracuse, right?
Oh, you know it, baby. Didn't see the Hoyas on a bracket.
Oh my God! The Hoyas, I haven't even paid attention. Jeez.
Listen. Watch this, Messiah. You ready, Messiah? I'll ask you this question: the Hoyas played Syracuse this year. Who won?
I think Syracuse did. See, they're not even Big East no more, man. They changed the game. We're old, guys.
I know. Listen. They're trying to bring the rivalry back, right? And if my homie was here in the kitchen, right, this would be for Nas, but I'm going to send it to you and Mikey. That is a wrong answer, sir. That is a wrong answer. So for him, he's trying to poke fun, and guess who lost that game? Okay, so Mikey D., welcome to the wrap up. How are you? I already asked you how you're feeling. Let's go for you put your hand up, I guess, for a certain situation that we touched on or talked about. Please allude to it.
And hey, guys, it's about time that these NFL players started getting paid. I mean, the league is making how much money? These teams are making so much money. And you know what? Eric Weddle's a nice player. I mean, Baltimore's in a position now where, you know, they had their run, their window was open, it's closed a little bit. They still have a nice quarterback in Joe Flacco, so they can kind of weather the storm for a couple of years so they build that team up. And Weddle's a nice safety. Yeah, it's a tough division for him to come play, but, hey, he's getting his $6 million per. Can't hate on him for that. You know, NFL doesn't have guaranteed contracts, so anytime a guy gets a chance to, you know, get some money, he's supposed to jump on it. Does he make their defense better? Yeah. I mean, from what they had last year, he's not Ed Reed, of course, but Weddle is a nice safety.
How does he make that defense better?
He gives them depth. He's a starting safety in the NFL who has experience and, you know, has been successful in his career. I mean, you don't make $6 million for being a bum.
That kind of changed this offseason. Wait, hold on.
In the passing defense for the Chargers, when have they been top 15 ever since he was there? Yeah.
But safety is a hybrid position. You're playing the run. You're playing pass defense. You know, you got to do a few things. So he's not a corner.
Okay, he's
undersized. He's a safety.
He's undersized, and he's going to have to deal with big tight ends game in and game out, and he's going to be getting older within that contract. How are they looking at this? Because he has experience. Besides Tyler Eifert, keep going.
Yeah, who do they have in that? What tight ends are they dealing with in that division? I mean, Gronkowski. Ooh. Nobody can guard Gronkowski.
You know who Weddle is? He's Leonard, the little Leonard from who they had before.
Right, and he's not a bad player. Leonard was a decent player.
He's okay if you get him on the cheap. But if you start overpaying, see how the NFL. The problem with the NFL free agency system is when guys hit the market, they're overblown so much. Look at the New York Giants. The money they dished out, and it's like snacks. The biggest contract ever offered to a D lineman. He's not Reggie White. He don't put pressure. But that's what free agency do in the NFL. Guys who was 4th, 5th round picks, who's labored 4 or 5 years, who's finally with the market, they get blown up to. I call it franchise players' money.
Well, the franchise players don't hit free agency. That's the problem. The difference makers don't hit free agency. If you got them, you keep them.
The problem with the, you know, we look at a snack and what he was able to do on that D-line for the New York Jets, and we go, oh, yeah, put him on the New York Giants. He's going to do that same exact thing because the New York Giants have Mo Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson and a Leonard Williams. And that's what gets him replaced is that he was on a defensive line that had, you know, 3 other Pro Bowlers on it. That's the issue. So we're going to dish out all this money for a player who, you know, who was playing well and who played decent but was perfect for that system and for what he was in. Now, I'm not saying that he can't go to New York and help them out with their run defense or their total defense, which is ranked dead last in the NFL because there's nowhere to go but up. I'm saying he's not going to be able to help. It's just you're overpaying. But when you have $60 million, when you have all that money and you are the New York Giants, what does it matter? It ain't tricking if you got it, so to speak. So what's the big issue? Just because you spent $200+ million on 3 players, $114 guaranteed. I mean, they just better work out. Yeah, you overpay,
but you have to pay.
They all better work out.
You have
out.
To pay that though.
No, you do not have
you
really to.
You have to. You have to spend 87% of the salary cap.
Not for those three.
You have to
you
spend 87% of the salary cap.
I understand. You could have spent all that money, but you didn't have to spend it on those 3 players. The problem now is those 3 need to work out. Now, I understand they're cap-friendly contracts that a couple guys are under, so it's not as ginormous as the public need to make it think. But if they don't work out, you spend all that money on those 3 guys instead of all that money on, you know, 4, 5, 6 guys and at different positions. So, to me, they have to work out now. They can't get injured and they got to play all 16. And it's just too much money into 3 guys that I don't feel were, the command that money or dollar, but the market commanded it. So it's a double-edged sword. They had the money anyway, so it is what
and
it is.
And this is why Fitzpatrick is sitting out there still. After watching Brock get 45 to 50 guaranteed money from the Texans, if I just do 31 touchdowns and won 10 games, I think I should get 18 mil. And if they always said, like in baseball, it's not the player's fault. It's all it takes is one dumb owner. That's all it takes.
I think
Osweiler made the right choice.
Of course. I mean, if they're throwing him that money down there in Houston, he wasn't going to get that from Denver. So I agree with you there, Mike. So, but this is something that Masai just hit on that I look at what he just said. I look at what Chandler was saying. Looking at what Baltimore just did with Weddle, it sets the bar higher for any other safety coming to the game. You know what I'm saying? Like, Weddle getting that type of money in the past 3 seasons. Let's look at the past 3 seasons. He's averaging 1 pick a game. I mean, a season. He's averaging 8 pick a season. Last season, he had none. The year before, he had 1. And the year before that, he had 2. The year that he led the league in interceptions was 2011, where he had 7. That was 4 going on 5 years ago. I think that this time has passed him by. I think he's actually on the decline if you look at his stats. Looking at this, and he missed 3 games last year. And he missed 3 games last year.
But is $6 million a lot, though, Ty? In the scheme of things, is $6 million a lot?
For him, yes. I think they could have got him for cheaper, Mike. I think they could have got him for cheaper. Just like Messiah just said, do you think that they would have went through the draft and somebody else would have picked him up? Honestly.
And I think that's what this free agency offseason will be dominated by. Not who was signed.
Wait,
the Pro Bowlers and franchise players who's left. Megatron quitting
right.
after 9 seasons. Today, Raji in the Packers, he's sitting out this year. That's more of a big news than the guys that's been switching teams this offseason.
No, we
you got
we
a starting defensive tackle, Pro Bowl player sitting out a year. That's
no, we,
a big
we,
hole.
We
I don't know what the Packers are going to be able to fill.
Well, they got that big guy Daniels up front. We did touch on that as well. But, Mike, answer the question. Do you think that they could have went through this, the NFL draft that's coming up in the next month or two, because I think it's in May now instead of being in April, do you think that Weddle would have been picked up now in the month of March or beginning of April if you know, the draft didn't come around? I think he'd still be available. I don't know if teams are gawking at Eric Weddle right now. I mean, he's been in the league for what? He's going into his ninth season. You know, those questions arise for me.
You're right.
I think this is this is what Mike's alluding to, is that somebody's going to jump first. It doesn't matter who it is, but somebody's going to do it. Now, do we all agree that Eric Weddle should have just sat there and a team should have waited until after the draft, until possibly until OTA started, until the preseason was looming, and then picked him up because you would have got him, or whenever it is you wait till you get him at the veteran minimum, and yada, yada, yada. That's what he's worth. But because they just, whoever it was, and it was happened to be Baltimore, they jumped the gun. They said, we need this guy. We need him. Yada, yada, yada. However they feel about him, that's how they feel about him. They're completely wrong. They're overpaying for him because if they would have waited, there's no doubt in my mind he would have stayed on the agency until you would have had to pay veteran minimum. I don't really think there's another team that could have got him. Sorry, go ahead.
But when you think about it, if you think about the Baltimore Ravens ending last year, did you really think, damn, if they only had a safety, this could have put them over the top?
No, but they're not a contender
next year, though.
They're not a contender.
Well, they get their quarterback back. And that's a huge difference. I mean, you say what you want about them. That's their quarterback with him. They've been going to the playoffs. I think they've missed it 1 year, with the exception of last year, which he didn't play. They've missed it 1 year. So he's been going to the playoffs. They know what they're doing. So you assume with Joe Flacco coming back, you assume that Ozzie and them boys in the front office will get the weapons necessary for that offense to click again.
And they didn't get no weapons. That's what makes it so puzzling. If you could have got one of these wideouts that hit the market.
You're saying Mike Wallace is going there.
No, what I'm saying is they'll be able to draft, and they'll be able to draft correctly. What have we heard about this entire draft? I mean, this is the draft to get your players in. You're not going to get a quarterback. And you're not going to get, that Andrew Luck or whatever, but the other players are there. There's talent to be had, and Ozzie Newsome has displayed that in these past drafts, that he knows what he's doing. Now, again, we can go back to last year, and this Ravens team, they had a plethora of injuries from top to bottom. So you get those guys back and you get them healthy, there's no doubt in my mind they're not competing with an AFC North team, especially when they beat, I think, two victories in out of all of them were against AFC North opponents. So they know what they're doing when it comes to playing with that division.
If they would have went for the wide receiver, Marvin Jones out of Cincinnati, and spent that money, I can understand that. I feel they need a wide receiver. You're taking it from the rival. You're weakening your rival. This conversation wouldn't even have gotten this far. But going all out for a non-vet safety that's been overachieving in my mind. I don't think there's a difference. If everything was intact, they made the AFC Championship and they was lacking the secondary, that's one thing. I feel they had other needs they didn't address.
But if their defense needs a veteran, I mean, who was better on the market than Weddle? I mean, you don't know what's going on with that defense. I mean, maybe that secondary needed somebody with some veteran leadership. Maybe they liked that about Weddle and felt that for $6 million, they kind of got him on the cheap.
I mean, we could spin through the free agency and see what safeties are available. But, Mike, he's going into his 10th season, right? And you just said that this upcoming season doesn't even look like it could be a big success for Baltimore, right? So he's going into his 10th season. So you're telling me in his 11th, 12th, and 13th year that they could potentially see some higher ground or success out of what he brings to the table?
Ty, you think he's getting 4 years out of that contract? You're crazy. That's a 2 year contract.
I feel like they could have done much better with what they're trying to wheel over for this guy. I feel like they could have gone through free agency much better than this guy. Like, I think they're going off of the perspective that you're bringing to the table, that he has experience at the end of the day. But what I'm looking at right now with his stats, like, there's nothing jumping out at me at all. Nothing. Nothing. Except 2011, where he led the league in picks, and that was 4 years ago. Like, it's dwindling. I think they actually went at him more as time went on after that Pro Bowl season. They were like, okay, so you thought you could play the outfield. We're going to come after you, honestly. And just think about that. 2011, that was before Peyton got around. Then Peyton came, and look how the numbers decreased.
And the talent on that team, on the defense, started dropping off. That wasn't the same Charger team that had Cromartie, Lights Out, and all them guys when they was in their prime, going 14-2, 15-1. And he was there for all that, too. He was the underachiever guy. He was there for all that. But when I watched the Charger game, I've never seen Eric Weddle on the game playing spotlight.
Right. Like I said, you know, good, you know, proper time, proper situation. That's how I look at him. And Mike, now that you put that in perspective, I don't even want to be, you know, hopeful on seeing him not make it through the duration of the contract. I don't want to say it like that. I want to look at it like, okay, well, this is what they thought of him at the end of the day, and I'm shaking my head at it. I'm shaking my head at it. And just like I said, this was something that Chandler would say, and Messiah just brought it up too. Now how do we look at other safeties that have equal or better, let's say it like that, equal or better value than Eric Weddle? How does this bar get set? You know what I'm saying?
Those guys are going to get more money.
Forget about Weddle setting the bar. How about Brock setting them with the bar?
Yeah, that's absolutely.
More damage to the game. You got Fitzpatrick who was off of $3 million at the backup last year. 10-11 is not good enough. That's what's also changing the game.
You know what, though? The NFL players deserve the money. I'm sorry. I mean, their window could be 2 or 3 years in the league, tops. I mean,
Hold on. We're not knocking the money. We're knocking the system.
$70 million. You
talk
$80 million.
The NFL draft system got changed because giving top guys all this crazy money guaranteed, and then you cutting veterans that already proven always had a problem with. They need to balance more to where if I'm picked in the third or fourth round and I'll play my contract the first 2 years, I need to get my money then. That really needs to be changed. We're not killing the money. They really need to hold out next time around. And this is you know, crazy. With the NFL
players,
it's fake money because they're not seeing
that
the only thing that's guaranteed is the signing bonus.
It's not baseball. Baseball, the players' union runs Major League Baseball. In football, it's the opposite. The owners run at the NFL.
NFL players
never
kept breaking down in the 80s. Every 3-4 years, they kept holding out, and they wouldn't stick to their guns. Now this is the most profitable sport, and they still haven't figured it out. They keep taking the cheese and then getting hit, caught in the trap every time.
And Roger Goodell looks like a genius coming out, and that's why the owners love him, and that's why he's still a commissioner.
That man made $44 million, and now we're not gonna know how much he make after this year. Can people forget the NFL was considered their tax status was damn near, you know, so now his money will be hitting off the book. But these players need to understand that when they talk about my money, I got a family. Oh, I decided to stay in this with the team, like your man Charles Johnson. I decided to stay with my team because that's where my heart is. Okay. So you're going to take $8 million left and then talk about, like, come on, these guys got to smoke them up.
I mean, one bad injury and you're done. And you know, there's no guarantees like baseball. It's a totally different ball game. And
baseball players fought for years to get that. That didn't happen overnight. You go out there to innings, some guys used to pitch. Okay.
Oh, they're still paying. Hey, the owners are still paying for what happened before the 70s.
Okay, all that collusion in the 80s when Andre Dawson hit 40 homers and they didn't get offer a deal, got offer $500,000 because they had collusion. Got had 40 home runs and they only offered them a 1 year deal afterwards, and that was 87.
Ricky was getting paid then.
Exactly. So the
Ricky
NFL players have to toughen up when they stop living check to check in the league. Stop having 10, 11 kids. You have to toughen up. Go to school and learn about money.
Lord have mercy. Okay.
And that $44 million that Roger Goodell gets is worth its weight in gold because he makes the owners a lot more than that.
He makes that in fining them for hits. After that salary, so the penalties for not wearing socks, for hitting, for you know, flags on the play, low blow. I mean, come on. If I'm an NFL player, I'm even, you know, y'all gonna keep docking me for hits when you feel like all these stupid fines for socks and all this. I'm gonna show up to media coverage, so I get another fine.
It's interesting too because you talk about the fines and we you're thinking and a lot of fans and everyone's thinking about oh the James Harrisons and you know maybe the big hit for like no go look if you look at individual and it's a real cool website it's called SpotRack SpotRack.com you can look at the individual players' contracts underneath that it'll show every year and how much they've gotten fined from the league. And you will see on multiple nobodies, they don't have to be anyone. You could pick, you know, go down the list of D linemen in the league, and they'll all have 2 to 3 to 4 to possibly 5 fines up at minimum $2,000, $3,000. And that's in every year.
We're not even talking about team fines, where they make
fine you for missing
meetings and stuff like that.
No, that's just the fine.
I mean, and what my man said in training, shit get deeper.
Oh. Yeah.
Shit get deeper, Jake.
Yeah.
I'm surgical
with
this.
Oh, my goodness. It's really ridiculous, and we get to, we get to thinking as, and obviously we're not making millions, and my friends aren't making millions, and we think, man, they're just so greedy. No. They are because they have to be.
Stop making it rain. Stop sitting on around spinning.
To me, saying things like that, that's letting the actions of a few outweigh the many. And when you see a lot of those things, I don't equate that with every single ball player, but they are doing that. The problem with that is when you have an environment that is so me-centric, when no one else is looking out for you, when your NFLPA is not really looking out for you, when your NFL is not looking out for you.
But you have to notice when you decide, I'm going to die for football. See, that's the problem. Remind me of the situation with the Florida State guy who was a high scholar and wanted to go to study overseas for 2 years. How does this hurt his draft stock? Because he was a top FSU, I'm forgetting the name, but that's what they want. People with no other way to survive, and the football got to work. And then you have to get out that mindset. Go to school. To learn. And then, me personally, I wouldn't even play a lot of these cross-country games on a Thursday night if I was some of these football players. But everybody wants to be like your man Malik from the program. They want to get to the campus, can't read, just run around, you know, and they get mad when you get to the league. And that was the whole bottom line of the Jonathan Martin incognito. Look, think about how much money that kid was being bullied for playing for a whole team to go to Hawaii, picking up tabs for dinners, and these six-figure dinners on a Tuesday night. That all tallies up. Money just going out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're 33, you can't hold down a job because you got football injuries. And then that's why I like Ballers. Go watch season one of Ballers.
Okay, Nacho, I know that you had a topic that you wanted to throw out there before we start getting close to closing up. Throw at least one of them out there.
You know, there was a topic in the NCAA program. $200 million was awarded to Division I programs to dispense to Division I athletes. This is the inevitable first step in paying these athletes. Paying them a don't want to say fair share without ruffling too many
40 acres in a mule.
Yeah, they definitely need to get some sort of reimbursement for the racks of money they bring into these organizations that are called schools that they play for. So just
what are your thoughts on it? Again, $200 million in an industry that we all know makes in the billions with a B every year. And again, this is for Division I athletes. I didn't get too involved into which Division I athletes, but we can all assume it's the major sports, the baseball, softball, basketball, and football organizations with their, you know, tournaments and championships. And, of course, we all know the NCAA football championship, which takes up, you know, five games in a championship game. So is this the beginning of the end of free, what do we say, free college athlete? And is this the route we should be going, paying these guys? Or should we just make college athletes a different entity in and of itself and start making them what they are, which is a different organization that are sponsored by schools, teams that are actually sponsored by schools? You have to be an attendee at the school to be on the team type of situation, but it is like a job in and of itself. Is that a way to go? Is this the right way to go? To me, I think the $200 million is the first step, but needs to be more when you think about how many athletes and things of that nature. To me, again, this is a little bit of, I think, wavering the you know, we're going to sort of give up white flag from the NCAA. I think it doesn't go much further from here. To me, I believe that these players should be allowed to make money off themselves, if not make money from the school, but at least from themselves, signing autographs, selling their own merchandise. But how do you guys feel about it? Is this the right step, and is this the first step of many, or you think this is just a shove in their mouth and make them shut up situation?
Mikey D, I'll go to you first about the new situation in front of these college athletes.
You know what, guys? I definitely think the players should get paid, but I think what they need to do is they need to either create a trust or a 401k, and scale it for these players and really invest this money for them instead of giving an 18- or 19-year-old kid X amount of dollars now and having them blow through it. I think they need to be responsible about it. I think you should get the longer you stay in college and the more years you play, it should scale up. So maybe you get more in your sophomore, your junior, then your senior. It'll entice kids to stay. It creates a retirement fund for these players that are now starting 401ks or trusts at 18 years old and letting that money build, and they'll have something on the back end. That is the way I would approach it. You make it flat rate, you know, depending on whatever the sport is or however you want to break it down. But I believe that money should get invested for them, and that's the way I would take care of it. I mean, I don't know if everybody agrees with that, but I'd like to see these, if they're going to get money, let's be smart about it. Let's create something for these kids. And let's teach them a little bit about money and money management. Now they have that money in a trust, or they have it in a 401k. Maybe they'll take some time to learn about it. Or maybe when you know, their careers are over and they have nothing, their college career won't stand for nothing. They'll have something in the end. So I think, yes, you pay them, but I think you have to do it a certain way where it's going to benefit kids to stay in school for a longer amount of time, and that their money is being watched and saved as a retirement for them.
Okay, Messiah, your thoughts on the situation? I actually like Mike's perspective right there. I truly do, all across the board. And especially if you do it that way, then you get the full 4 years out of these guys instead of them, you know, and I feel bad in calling this player out, but like a Ben McLemore situation where he was in college for his freshman year and said, I'm leaving because I got to support 16 people in my family. Like, at least it gets these guys to further their education and do what's right at the end of the day, is attain, you know, knowledge and be ready for the rest of their lives instead of playing, you know, a window of 8 to 15 years of a sport and then have nothing to show for afterward, you know, because a lot of these players and athletes blow through that money, you know. So I agree with Mike wholeheartedly, but Messiah, we'll go with you on this one.
In the words of the late, great Nate Dogg, it's never enough. My whole thing is with this. Are we we removed from once the NCAA, what it was formed. It was amateur sport. It was amateur sport. That was the myth. A couple of rich kids in school trying to blow off steam. They want to play a little football. Fine. Then it evolved to getting the best athlete. Then you start letting the brothers on campus, and then interest build. At one point, college sports was bigger than actual professional sports. At what time, even in the 60s, college basketball was the bigger audience than the NBA. So now, even with all that sense, now it's because of TV, because of merchandise, because of the globalization of the NBA, college sports, especially when it comes to football, it's basically professional business now. But when you're dealing with business, the best way to make the most money is to do what? Keep the cost of labor down. Mm-hmm. So when you keep the cost of labor down, you get to keep most of the pot. Now, with Ben McLemore and all these athletes, like, the hardship has always been there. But what the whole thing is, when it comes to this money, who's going to say how much money it is now? This is where the government and Congress need to get involved. They get involved in anything else when it comes to other stuff, because they also get their pockets lined up, with a lot of these politicians. And no one wants to crack open the books. Because if you crack open the books, what's going to be the split? Who's going to pay the health insurance? Who's going to document? So it's always good. Well, listen, their kids, they're supposed to be in school. And we're not valuing education, because to be the top athlete now, it's not like before. If you happen to be good at the sport, you can excel. It's so much before you get to college. People are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars before kids even get to college playing the top-end sports. So we have to scale back. We have to scale back and let these kids be kids. If we were to go back and say freshmen can't play, let you go get stay on the campus for a year and get educated, people will lose their mind. Mm-hmm. People will lose their mind. If we went back to freshmen not playing, focus on getting a higher education, coaches don't have to worry about getting fired. They could play out their contract like it used to be. Everyone is feeling under the gun. I got to get paid before I blow up money. I got to get this kid who might tear up this campus. But if I can win with him, I can move on to a bigger school that could pay me more. The trustees or these boosters, you got to please these boosters that's donating godly amount of money. I mean, go back and look at it. Everyone loved Alabama with Nick Saban. People forget how much they was able to buy out the coach before that and give him that much money. I mean, so the whole system is fractured, but the people who's lining their pockets are the people who's used to money anyway. I think Mike has a good idea there, but that's the philosophy. You know, philosophy of how things should be and what needs to be done is two different things.
Okay, Nacho, your thoughts on this twist before we start to close up on the situation.
You know, like I said, I really do think that this is an organization, like they said, it's amateur professionalism, so to speak. I mean, these guys, they spend 6 months away from the college athletic sport they were in, and they go straight to professional sports. It's not very long after they leave that they go into professional sports and become starters where they should be. So, to me, these guys deserve to get some sort of, pay representation, some sort of something, at least be able to, again, make money off their own name, sell their own to get their own name out there and make money off of their names if they can. It's probably a step in a direction that I feel is to where Mikey's saying or Mike B's saying that they're going to hand these kids 18-year-old, 19-year-old, 17-year-old kids, 20-year-old kids money and just say, here you go. They're going to end up spending it right away. No investment, no real knowledge of what to do with this income. And then when it gets greater at the next level, we're going to see the same destructive patterns that we see now, especially in a league like the NFL, where we can't go an entire week without someone getting arrested for something. It's just one of those things that it's a never-ending cycle that I feel that the heads of schools, the heads of, like you said, politicians, they want to see it continue to the length of their pockets.
Okay, well, we are at the tail end of the show. I have some stuff that I wanted to at least talk about with the bracket, but I can save that for the cookout because I know we'll have big-time discussion on a lot of these people, like Syracuse making the doggone tournament. Oh, my goodness.
My boss was the first thing she said at 8:10 this morning. My Syracuse is in there.
I like the boss.
You already hear how Mikey D came here like Syracuse was some blockbuster team this year. I mean, the Hoyas slapped them around. He don't even – look. Let me tell you something, Tyler. When I say who won that game, he turned quiet. I call him church mouse when I say that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got the edge on him. Don't forget, we closed the manly college. You feel what I'm saying? We went up there and did what we needed to do with Syracuse. You know, historically, he know what the Hoyas do. Like, we crushed the Hornets. Look, I'm not even going to go there. We'll save it for tomorrow. I had a lot of stuff on teams that got snubbed. I mean, Monmouth with the season that they had, St. Mary's with their season that they had. A lot of people up in arms on the house. A lot of these brackets are going to end up panning out. Why Nova isn't in the East bracket where the Elite Eight is going to be played in Philadelphia, and they weren't, you know, put in that situation. And this is all for the cookout, I guess, tomorrow, because this is heavy stuff. The bracket alone, and I had all of the football stuff. I didn't know that it would carry as well as it did today, but at least the cookout, it should be juicy with a lot of bracketology, if you will. I do like how this is going to pan out. But I think plugs and closeouts from each of you. Messiah, I'll let you go first. Plug, close out, anything that you'd like to shout out before we shut it down. Here is the wrap-up.
Well, thanks, your boy, Messiah Twain. Well, I not also owe you an only apology for an insensitive post on my Twitter page. You thought I forgot about that. But I'm a man of my word. Okay, so my bag, T-Pal, all right? But Messiah 2K is loaded up. We hit the booth again this weekend on monthly podcast.
Wait. In the words of Rakim, it's been a long time.
You know about Rock here. You ain't ready for that.
Please. I'm an 80s baby too now.
But, you know, besides 2K, you know, we got the last show posted from Black History Month. We're going to hit the booth this weekend. 3-hour show, that's a little much, but I'm definitely going to shout you guys out. And to Twitter is always growing. And, you know, we're going to have to join forces, man. But I'll be back this week because this NFL, man, they burning money like the Joker in The Dark Knight, man.
They burning money. I know. Oh, my goodness.
Guys are slotted out piles of money. It's getting ridiculous.
Jesus.
You know, guys are not even making Pro Bowls, man. Pro Bowls.
Exactly. I think he's made one Pro Bowl, and they gave him 26. Like, man, okay. Like I said, I feel like I'm being a hater. Like, and I'm not even gonna lie, I'm calling myself out for talking about Weddle like this. Weddle, you may show me up. I don't know if you got people that listen to the kitchen and tell you, yo, TP calling you out. I hope you call me out on TV. Like, TP, how about that? Like, I wanted to be like that. Show me up, because if we listen to what Mikey D said, Baltimore ain't even gonna have a successful season this year. So they're waiting for you to get older. He's gonna be 32 next year. Come on, okay. I'm done. I'm not even going to bake this dude that much. Look, I'm getting out of the kitchen. Mikey D, I need a plug, close out, shout out as we set it down here at the wrap up.
Ty, I just want to let you know what NIT stands for. Not in tournament.
Oh.
Have fun with your Georgetown Hoyas, and what are you going to do?
Hold on, Mike. What was the furthest Syracuse has made it since, like, 2004, since Carmelo won
it's
the championship?
It's about time Boeheim didn't get screwed. He's been getting screwed for
20 years.
Finally, threw him a bone.
Why do you always fight me? Answer the question, man. Dad, you always act like that? Every time I ask you a question, even on the air? But you won't answer the question? You going to beat around the bush?
Not in tournament.
Okay, well, then you know what? I'm going to start calling you Mike Tyson opponents because you guys go out in the first or second round. How about that? You want to be funny. that's a good lead-up to Nacho since he's my boxing guy. So, Nacho, I need a plug on our shout-out as we shut it down here at the wrap-up.
And Nacho on the Box, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You know, bracket's going to be fun to talk about. South Dakota State.
Dayton, and Buffalo. Look who they play. Upset City coming y'all way. Well, except for Dayton, because they're not playing an upset. But everyone else, man, it's going to be great tomorrow. Let's talk about all that good stuff. It's going to be great tomorrow, man. It's going to be a great day.
Yes.
So let's get it going.
Mikey, do you know who Dayton play, right?
I know who they play.
Okay. So if y'all go out in the first round, I don't want to hear nothing. They listen to Sports City. They can't tell me nothing. You know what? Nacho can't mean that. Nacho won't play around with people. Nacho came
not
in the kitchen
in tournament.
It don't matter. That's what Nacho did with that Dayton Flyers. If the Flyers come on, I'm telling you. It's going to be fantastic. I bet you don't hear from Mikey D in his kitchen. I know that. That's why Mikey D scared to answer the question on who won Georgetown and Syracuse this year. He still won't even answer that right. He won't. He'll give you a roundabout. Okay. So we'll be back here tomorrow talking about the bracket, the cookout, the grill. Everything will be lit. You already know what to do. Get back in here. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blogs, the chefs. Like I said, shout out to the Latham family. Part of my family lost an aunt. That's why I was out this weekend. So that's what it was, man. Heavy hearted situation, man. But I'm back on my cylinder, man. It's been a heavy 2016 startup. But we back in the building, Sports City. On that note, tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
For their purchase. We surely appreciate it. What you about to witness is my thoughts.
Just my thoughts, man.
Right or wrong, just what I was feeling at the time.